it, but now I'm here, so you're going to be punished. You know, a lot of times it works out that way in life, right? There's with the good, you have to take the bad. So anyway, we just have a few minutes, literally just a few minutes. But I want to speak with you about something that I believe is of terrible importance. Is that a good way to put it? Terribly important. What is your motivation? What is your reason for your faith? And I think that's motivation, obviously, is more important than we could even give it credit. What is your why? You know, a lot of us have figured out that motivation frequently makes all the difference in our lives. If we're motivated, it's really quite fantastic what we can accomplish, what God can do through us. I think God has made us that way. If we have the motivation, maybe you figured out already, and this is true in any area of life, whether it's school or work or relationships, if you're motivated, you're going to do well. A lot of you have figured out maybe too that why is more important than what. Because if you get the why, then the what almost always will take care of itself. And again, we could accomplish great things. So we want to talk about, just for a few minutes here, our motivation for our faith and for the living of our spiritual life. I want to take a little bit of a survey here. One of the things I like about our church is that before we baptize people, we almost always do something that we call counting the cost, right? You're familiar with that idea. And so what we do is, and I love this about our church, we don't want people to make shallow decisions. We want people to understand a little bit about what they're getting into, and we want them to try to, you know, see what they're going to be facing as they follow Jesus. And so we try to describe for them, you know, the blessings, but also the challenges of their faith. And we count the cost with people before they get baptized. How many of you, though, who did count the cost, you made your decision to follow Jesus, before you were baptized, you counted the cost, how many of you actually have found out that it's harder than you thought it was going to be? See there? And it's not because the people who studied with you didn't do their very best to try to help you to understand it, but it frequently works that way. And that's why it's so important, our motivation. What is going to keep you maintaining, you know, having a great passion for Jesus, for your faith, as the years roll by? You know, I hesitate to say it, but there are people in this room, not just Peter, that I have known for decades. Some of us have been a part of this fellowship. We made our decision to follow Jesus many, many, many years ago, and that's all I'm going to say about that. If I told you that when I was baptized into Christ, November 8, 1978, a lot of you folks would go, well, I wasn't even born yet. And, you know, I came here to be encouraged tonight, and I don't want to hear that. Let's look over in the book of Mark. There's four accounts of the life and ministry of Jesus. Perhaps you know that. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. We're going to look at Mark. And in fact, this is something that we've been studying in my part of the church. We actually just finished going through Mark, starting there in chapter 1, going all through 16 chapters. Mark is... You may not know this, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. Mark was the first of the four accounts of the life and ministry of Jesus that was written. It was written about 10 years before the others were. So if you had lived during the early Christianity, there would have been a period of time where the only message that you had, the only written account of the life and ministry of Jesus, would have been Mark for at least 10 years. Now, one of the things about Mark that you may or may not like, Mark is the shortest of the four. And Mark leaves out a lot of details. The thing I actually like that about Mark, I mean, Mark, He just tends to get right to the point on things. And he seems to be very clear. As the saying goes, many times you have to be a theologian to misunderstand what he's saying and what Jesus is saying as Mark records it. So let's read. Let's go back to the very beginning and let's think about what is your why. And perhaps we'll learn something here tonight in Mark chapter 1, verse 16. As Jesus walked beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and his brother Andrew casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come follow me, Jesus said, and I will make you fishers of men. At once, they left their nets and followed him. When he had gone a little farther, he saw James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John in a boat preparing their nets. Without delay, he called them. They left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired men and followed him. And we'll stop there. Chances are that many of you have read that before. If we're honest, and perhaps if you're reading for the first time, you might think, this is one of the strangest stories I've ever seen or read in the Bible. Because what it looks like, if this is all there was to it, is that Jesus just shows up, and there's some fishermen there, and he says, come follow me, and they did, and they left their they left the boat there, and they just walked away. And that is a little bit strange, isn't it? But the truth is, and this is why it's good that we have Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the truth is that there's more to the story than this. Did you know that? My theory is that Mark was married. I don't know that for sure, but he's like a lot of husbands. He leaves out a lot of details. And I don't know if that's a problem in your marriage. But anyway, we know from John's account that the first time Jesus met, we read the story in John chapter 1 about the first time he met these guys, Peter, his brother Andrew, James, and John. And that was about 9 months to a year before that. So he already had a relationship with these guys. And then if you look in Luke chapter 5, there's a great story. Then you get the full story, and a lot of you might know that story. Jesus is preaching. There's a large crowd there. The crowd was pressing around him, and he was down by the beach and down by the water, and the fishermen were over there, and Jesus says, hey, can I go out in your boat for a little bit to get away off the shore? He preaches the rest of his sermon. He says, go out into the water, cast your net. We've been fishing all night. Don't think we're going to get anything, but we will anyway. Big catch of fish. Peter and the guys come to faith, and they follow it. So that's the whole story, right? But Mark, and maybe there's something to learn here. He says, I'm just going to leave all that out. Let me tell you, and this will help us, because we're looking for our why. We're looking for our foundation. We're looking for our motivation. Let me just strip away all the everything else, and let me just tell you the way it went down. And let me tell you the thing you need to know more than anything else. Jesus said to them, come follow me. And they followed him. Jesus must be our why. Jesus is the reason for our faith. Jesus must be our foundation. Jesus must be our motivation. And that, I hope that doesn't seem too simple for you. Because the truth is, many of us in our faith, and I'm talking to people, of course, who've decided to follow Jesus. A lot of you have been baptized sometimes 10, 20, more years ago. Many of us started with Jesus. But along the way, we've gotten distracted. Along the way, we've detoured. Along the way, we've been deflected. And we've forgotten what it was all about. Do you realize what's so important about this? You know, a lot of times when we read this verse, Mark chapter 1, verse 16 or verse 17, we correctly share this, and maybe somebody shared it with you before you made your decision to follow Jesus. Come follow me, Jesus said, and I will make you fishers of men. And what we emphasize here is, see, if you're going to be a follower of Jesus, you need to be a fisher of men. That is an accurate and correct way to use that scripture and to understand it. But don't, if that's all you get out of it, you miss the main point. He said, come follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. And then what does it say? And they followed him. Did they become fishers of men? Yes. But they only became fishers of men because they made a decision to follow Jesus. This was always the call of Jesus. It started here in Mark. You look all through the Gospels, the rest of Mark, the rest of the stories. It's all about every time Jesus said, come follow me. You know, it's sometimes hard to be a Christian. We said that earlier, didn't we? You count the cost, it's even harder than you thought it was going to be. It's sometimes hard. It's great to be a Christian. We wouldn't trade that life for anything. The blessings are infinite. It's sometimes hard to be a Christian, but it's much easier when you're following Jesus. Jesus inspires. Jesus amazes. Jesus moves me. Young people, teens, college students, you new Christians, Jackie Tran. Where's Jackie? Great job sharing. What a story. What a story. The best advice I can give you is somebody who's been a part of this fellowship and who made their decision. I already told you the date. Some of you are really smart and you did the math. What is it, almost 37 years ago? Almost 37, coming up. Why am I still here? Why am I still doing what I'm doing? Because I've been following Jesus. Being a Christian can be hard sometimes. But it's a lot easier if you're following Jesus. Will you invest in Jesus? Will you focus on Jesus? Will you really spend your mind and your heart and put it all, would you put it all on Jesus? Imagine if we all made it about Jesus. Imagine if we helped each other to make it about Jesus. See, I've been a part of this church for a long time, and a lot of you are going to relate to what I'm saying. One of the mistakes that we have made in the past is that we made our faith too much about the church and not enough about Jesus. Now, and I love the church. The church is part of the plan of God. The church is not optional. The church is a blessing. Where would we be without the church? This is our family. This is our friends. This is where we gain so much and we get so much help. And it's really such a vital part of the plan of God. I love the church, but I don't worship the church. I worship Jesus. And why is that important? Because if it hasn't happened to you yet, I'm going to have to walk down the aisle for this one. Because I want to make sure I get all you people in the back there too. Here's the thing we have to understand. If it hasn't happened to you yet, there's going to be a time where the people in the church are going to disappoint you. They might even let you down. Even worse, you might find a sinner in the church. Now we say that and we laugh because we know the problem. You know what the problem with the church is? It's made up of people like me and you. The church is never going to be perfect. But when you make it about the church, it may not be today. There's a time your faith is going to be damaged. I love the leaders in the church. Do you love the leaders in the church? I hope so because I am one. I love the leaders in the church. The leaders are vital. They're of God from the beginning, from the Bible, the Old Testament to the New Testament. God's people have always needed leaders, and leaders have done so much, and they are so important. I love the leaders in the church, but I don't worship the leaders in the church. I worship Jesus. I love the Bible. I love the Bible. I study hours and hours every week, not because it's a part of my job and not because I have to. I've been preaching through the life of Jesus for the book of Mark. It took me a whole year, by the way. And you can either, you know, feel bad about that or feel good about that. But because I'm not in a rush, because I'm digging for gold here. I'm looking for a reason to keep going. What I have figured out, you know what I entitled my recent series that I just finished? In Search of the Real Jesus. And at the end, after a year, somebody asked me, did we find him? I go, you know, not really. Why do I say that? Because this is one of the most exciting things about my faith, is that Jesus, his ways are higher than our ways. His mind, we can't follow. I mean, he's Jesus, and you're you. That's the problem. You are you. And so we need to keep digging. And you know, hopefully me and everybody else in my ministry has a better understanding of who Jesus is and a better appreciation and maybe an opportunity to love him more. But we haven't figured out Jesus yet. We're never going to figure him out until we get to the other side. We can't even. But see, if we will all just invest in Jesus, it can make such a difference in our faith. Well, we're about out of time, aren't we? I'm just going to ask you one question, then I'm going to share something with you. The one question I want to ask you to consider, it's a sober moment. Is there an expiration date on your faith? Do you know what I mean by that? I'll explain it to you because some of you look confused. In your refrigerator, you will find food items. And in the pantry, there's cans and there's packages. Okay, you know, and on these, if you look close enough, and it's written really small usually, on all the food there's an expiration date, right? And usually it's sometime in the future, but you don't want to eat the food past the expiration date. You know, some of you know this already, but my wife is one of the healthiest eating people in the world. If I only ate the food that was in my refrigerator, I would be the healthiest man in America. The problem is I don't always eat out of my refrigerator. But anyway, but here's the thing that we need to be sober about this. Here's what I'm telling you. If you don't make your faith about Jesus, there's going to come a day. And it may be not today, and it may be not tomorrow, and it may be not next week, and it may not be next year, but there's going to come a day when you're going to go, why am I doing this? Why am I still here? This is way harder than I thought it was going to be. And you know what? The challenges just keep coming. That bothers me. Does that bother you? I feel like at this point, I put enough years in here by now, I ought to be just challenge-free. You know, I just ought to be able to sail right on into heaven now. Right? But it doesn't work that way. Trust me. This may seem simple. I hope it is simple enough for you to get it. But it's also profound. Because I've seen so many people. I got with a guy this morning who had left the church, and praise God, he came back last week and to church, and you know, we're working on, he's a John Catania in the making. And I've known John for years, love John. So he's perhaps on his way back. But you know, I talked to him about it, and I talked about, well, why did you leave, and what's going on? You know everything he had to say? The church was this, the church is that, and the leaders were this, and the leaders were that. Everybody leave. Nobody leaves the church because of Jesus. Right? Right? Jesus is not the problem. But the problem is we focus on the wrong things. Can we just accept the fact that we want the church and the leaders to be the best they can be, and hopefully we're trying, and hopefully we'll keep helping each other, and hopefully we'll get better and better? But don't walk away from Jesus because the church has disappointed you, or the leaders have disappointed you. So I really do have to close, but what I did, I wrote this back in April, and I'm going to close with this, is it was really to help me, and then I share it with you, maybe it'll help you. This is a personal letter that I wrote to Jesus. I wrote it April 12th, 2015. The reason I know that is because I wrote it right here at the top of my paper. It's a personal letter to Jesus, and the title is Why I Am Still Following Jesus. I was barely 23 years old when I decided to follow you, Jesus. It was just the right time for me. I felt the emptiness of my life so deeply, and I found a large group of people who loved you and were serious about following you. Their lives inspired me and gave me hope for my own life. I had never seen that before. I think you had something to do with that, Jesus. No, I think you had everything to do with that. It seemed almost too good to be true, and I wondered if it was. I'm sure you remember the hours and hours I spent looking at the evidence to see if I could have a real faith in you. Thank you for providing all the reasons I needed to believe. Thank you for providing all the reasons anyone needs to believe. Jesus, you lived and you died on a cross for me. You were raised from the dead so I also could live a new life. That's why I'm still following you. Of course, many years have passed now. More than anything else, it's been a life of joy and blessing. But it has also been just as challenging as you warned me it would be. Perhaps I should say, even harder than I thought it might be. If I'm honest, most of the time, the difficulty is within me. My own struggle with sin, insecurity, and selfishness. Even so, you keep loving me, even when I've fallen and disappointed you. Instead of condemnation and retribution, you offer me fatherly discipline, repentance, and forgiveness. Your grace continually overwhelms me. Your vision for me sustains me. You love me even when you get very little back. That's why I'm still following you. Since I'm being honest, there have been times when your church has seemed to be my biggest problem. I'm not sure why, but I had thought the people in the church would be as perfect as you are. And in the beginning, it seemed that way, but it didn't last. Sin in the lives of other church members, leaders who were sometimes harsh and misguided, friends in the church who let me down, the list goes on and on. I guess you helped me with this as much as anything through the years. I'm inspired, Jesus, when I read your story, how you loved and responded to people in your life who were failing you. Through the years, you've patiently showed me the hypocrisy of judging other people in your church who are actually so much like me. About 10 years ago, when it seemed like it would be too much to even continue as part of your church, you empowered me and strengthened me in ways I could have never anticipated. And now, when I see the imperfection of your church, it just reminds me of how wonderful and powerful you are. Other people may let me down, but you never do. That's why I'm still following you. Now I'm coming closer to the end of my days. Hopefully not soon, though. I wrote that in there. So I want to make sure Jesus understood. Coming closer to the end of my days, you continue to work powerfully in me and through me. My life has significance and purpose. I enjoy more and more freedom, freedom from the power of sin and the fear of death. You're showing me how to love when I'm not loved. You're teaching me how not to care so much what others may think about me. You're still showing me how to live. You still want me, even though you don't need me. You keep proving that you and your words can be trusted. You still love me in ways that I know, and perhaps even more ways that I have forgotten or missed along the way. That's why I love you. That's why I'm still following you. So I want to ask you to do something. Are you here for a reason? You just enjoy leaning on that post. Mike Mead, ladies and gentlemen. Yes. So, what I want to ask you to do, consider doing, this is an exercise that I believe will help you. You write your own personal letter to Jesus. In the next week, take some time and write your own personal letter to Jesus. And then, as the days and the weeks go by, keep investing in Jesus. Keep looking at Jesus. Don't let, even when terrible things happen, even inside the church, or perhaps so tragically, even with a leader in the church, you keep your focus on Jesus. Let Jesus be your reason. Let's pray together. Jesus, thank you so much for giving.